They go on through another key and they get over there to the buckwheat. Buckwheat stands up and teaches. Buckwheat, your job is dictator. Your word is dictator. He said, D-I-C-K-T-A-T-E, dictator. She said, can you make a sentence out of it? He said, uh-huh. He said, don't I like the way my dictate?
Yeah, that's time. Go ahead and open the meeting.
Hello, my name is David. I'm an alcoholic.
David.
Welcome to the Walnut Springs Campfire Meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. We're glad you're all here, especially with me.
Glad to be here.
This is an open meeting. Alcoholics Anonymous, we can use it anyone, may it be. Alcoholics Anonymous Preamble is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. It does not wish to engage in any controversy. Neither endorses nor opposes any causes.
Good.
Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Social care to please
come on in.
In this meeting was a moment of silent prayer and meditation, and we'll follow that with the surrender prayer. Surrender prayer.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Anyone here visiting this meeting for the first time?
That's true.
Yeah, I'm a rookie.
Glad you're here.
<All right. laughs>
I'm going to raise my hand.
Anybody here in their first 30 days of sobriety?
We're talking about, I don't want to light a cigar.
And that's what I need. At this time, we'll recognize any yearly AA birthday. Anybody had a yearly birthday this past month? All right. I have asked Dan to read the test.
Hi, everybody. I'm Dan. I've got a desire to stay sober.
Dan?
The 12 steps of AA. 1. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. We came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. We made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood it. 4. We made a searching, fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. We admitted to God, to ourselves, to the human vision, the exact nature of our lives. 6. We were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects. 7. We humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. We made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. We made direct amends to such people whenever possible. I'm sorry, wherever possible. Then we continue to check personal inventory and then we will go on. 11. We sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Thank you, Dan.
Yes.
Let's
exclaim.
Just sit there. Nobody wants you to read. I've asked Rick to read a portion of more about alcoholism.
I'm Rick. I'm going to read a portion of more about alcoholism.
Oh, Rick.
Many of us have been unwilling to admit we were alcoholics. We were real alcoholics. No person likes to think he is bodily and mentally different from his fellows. Therefore, it's not surprising that our drinking careers have been characterized by countless faint attempts to prove we could drink like other people. the idea that somehow, someday, he will control and enjoy his drinking is the greatest obsession of every abnormal drinker. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. We learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost self that we were alcoholics. It's the first step in recovery. The illusion that we are like other people or presently may be has to be smashed. We alcoholics are men and women who have lost the ability to control our drinking. We know that no real alcoholic ever recovers control. All of us felt at times we were regaining control, but such intervals usually breed and inevitably followed by still less control, which in time may be pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. We're convinced to a man that alcoholics of our type are in the grip of a progressive illness. Over any considerable period, we get worse, not better. We are like men who have lost their legs. They never grow human like. Neither does there appear to be any kind of treatment which will make alcoholics of our kind like other men. We have tried every imaginable remedy. In some cases, in some instances, there has been brief recovery followed always by still worse relapse. Physicians who are familiar with alcoholism agree that there's no such thing making a normal drinker out of an alcoholic. Science may one day accomplish this, but it hasn't done so yet.
Thank you, Rick.
Absolutely.
Anybody have any AA related
announcements?
My name is Stephen Williams,
and
I am an alcoholic.
Hey, Stephen.
Next week, Saturday night, Stephenville Group, David A. will be a guest speaker over there. So, as y'all have the opportunity to travel over to Stephenville next week, meeting is at 8 o'clock. Everybody's
going to
be
guest
speaker. Thanks.
It'd
be a good time to get out
and
do a road.
Thank you, Stephen.
Next weekend is also the area of assembly up and down. You've never been to one. Don't know what it's all about. Come on up and watch. You have a good time.
Thank you, Gary.
One more note. The green guard ever comes to town. Dallas, come by and say hi. I do the yard yard, but nothing new. I call him and fuck y'all answer y'all phone, this bird, she's back in town, all that shit. You working one by us. Talking to that damn over there working on. Go ahead, David. David's on one.
Talk to that was ever an AA related.
I'm pretty sure that
was
an AA related.
I'll tell you what.
AA related wine.
Water, alcoholic, or wine, and all that.
You bitch, your dog's food out of
You want a little cheese with that wine?
I sure do.
Our seventh tradition reminds us we're self-supporting to our own contributions. There's a coffee can by the coffee pot, so please contribute if you can.
David, I'm sorry. Kevin, what about Inky Paul? It was postponed?
Yeah, Texas Paul, the kickball tournament that was supposed to be today is postponed until next Saturday at 2 at Hewitt City Park. It's $1 per person. If y'all want to play kickball, incomplete teams are welcome. We have trophies. And there's a host committee meeting. There's still a chance to be involved in that. Me and Waco are trying tomorrow at 3:30. Those meetings happen every third Sunday at 3:30. I'm trying. So, thank you.
Thanks, Kevin.
This speaker tonight, it's an honor to get to introduce this guy. This is a guy that went to high school with, and we were less than friendly towards each other. That's kind of different kind of night. Today, I don't know of anybody that I can talk to at a deep spiritual level. There's very few people I can talk to like I can this man. This man took me to my first AA meeting back in 1991. And I remember when he came to the door, we just looked at each other and shook our heads. And just said, I'm afraid you'd be dead by now. It's just a pleasure anytime I get to hear him share or speak or just be around him. And nice to have him here tonight. So, Cole, it's all yours.
Thank you.
Thank you, David. My name's Cole Word. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Cole.
Hello.
Sobriety dates June 27, 1994. And I am more grateful for that than probably words can convey. I knew one reason, and thank you, Gary and David, the pioneers of the Katy Park campfire meeting. This, I'm a rookie. It's my first time. And I knew if I ever came out here, I'd love it. And I think we ought to maybe move our group out here. We smoke and eat and listen to Bud tell his colorful jokes. Smoke cigars. It's good to be alive and to be sober. To be sitting around a fire like this on a Saturday night and be sober with friends.
Amen.
And wasn't always that way. Sonia said to be sure and tell everybody hello. One thing that what happens to you in sobriety, one of the pitfalls that you need to be careful in long-term sobriety is home is actually a great place to be now. It's not a war zone anymore. And it's a place where it's warm and it's love and it's a good place to go. She worked today and she came home and I knew once she jumped in the shower and the pajamas went on, Kylie went to the movie and she said, you go ahead. I'm going to stay right here with my dogs. And that's okay. We have a home today, thanks to Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's a place where we're raising our boys. And it is really a place of comfort and of peace. And it's turned out to be one of my favorite places to be. And it never was that way when I drank, because I was always trying to figure out how to get the hell out of that house. I never stayed in that house. It was just a place where I cycled through to maybe get a shower, change clothes, or pass out, if I was lucky to make it home. It was just a place. I've had very few homes, but the homes that I've had since I've been sober and Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's one of the blessings of this program that I hope everyone gets to experience, that you have a home. When I left there, she and Kylie were actually, before Mom came to pick him up, watching Ron White. And man, if there was ever a practicing alcoholic, the one that needs to be here tonight, it's that guy. You know, he was, what a drunk. What a funny alcoholic, though. He was telling some long story, and the policeman pulled him over, and he said, he was sitting there thinking, God, please take me to jail. I'll make $1 million telling this story to all you assholes out there. And he just, you know. Oh, no, isn't America a great place where a guy can sit up there and smoke a cigar and drink way too much scotch and just tell stories that we are all too familiar with? He stands up there in about 30 minutes and I can see me in every one of those stories, you know. I wasn't, what is it, I wasn't drunk in public.
Public.
They threw me into public. Then we sat there and talked about Jeff Foxworthy was doing his deal. And, you might be a redneck. And we run with that in our house, in our home. Everything, we tell lots of AA humor in our home. And I've heard Gary and Lorraine talk to you about the washing machine. Spinning and agitating. And it's kind of like being an alcoholic. Come on in. Pull you up a chair.
What moment?
You bought your own? Good. Feel the fire.
Hey, glad you're here.
I ain't going to be nothing worse here. But we have fun when thinking about Foxworthy. I'll get to my drinking log in a minute. It's all the same. Hey, how are y'all? What's going on?
I'm not fine. I'm doing good.
Good. Good.
Good answer.
That's a good answer. We all know what fine is.
Insecure, neurotic, and
I was just telling them about our at home. I was watching some Foxworthy before I came, and about you might be a redneck, and we've run with that in our house about some of the things that might say you might be a real alcoholic. And we come up with a list of ours, and you can come up with some of your own. But if you've ever soiled your tie puking in a bar urinal, you might be a real alcoholic. If you have ever gotten drunk, passed out, woke up, and gotten drunk three times during the daylight hours, you might be a real alcoholic. We went on and on with the list. We came up with some pretty good ones. If you have ever gotten up in the middle of the night and peed in the closet instead of the bathroom in the bedroom, you might be a real alcoholic. But we have fun with those kind of things. That's the kind of humor we have in our home. Went to a conservatory or the Bosky Collections luncheon today, and the gentleman that did the program today was from Walnut Springs, Brian Sowell. And he was a great historian, and his program was on Walnut Springs. So how neat to be sitting there. I know more about Walnut than probably Gary. And he was raised in Walnut. This all used to be a huge lake over there. And there used to be three dams. This used to be the metropolis of Bosque County. And Gary, they had pictures of that hospital, and you said it was back over here. They had a college here, saloon on every corner, four lodges. I mean, this was a huge, it was the largest place in Bosque County. Been talking about all the shootings and the killings they had here. It's a great time. And some old guy came up and he said, "Yeah, your dad had his 10th or 12th birthday party. Mr. Word bought us all up there to Katy Park and O.A. Hardwick." So that was kind of neat to kind of hear some of that old history in the county. All I could remember was about getting drunk. I don't know if you were with us. There were a couple of partners in crimes here from Meridian back when we were raised. And we got to drinking one Halloween night. We're going to come up and get one of Mitchell Massey's commodes. This guy right up here was a strange bird.
Amen.
And he built a fortress out of commodes. And his house, is the house still up there, the old house?
The old house, fine.
But he stacked, worked for years building a fortress out of commodes and stuff. And we're going to go up there and get heavy shot at us. I don't think he was trying to shoot us, but I mean, he shot two or three times. Get the hell out of here. We did. But down at Jackson Crossing down here, that was one of our favorite pastimes. It was one of the favorite watering and smoking places. And if you go there during the day in the summer, a lot of time, Mitchell would be down there hauling, digging, had his old truck down there with those beer cans at him. Give him a hard time. So I asked two or three of the Walnut people if they had any Mitchell Massey stories. They all said, "Yeah, we all got some of those." Was raised there in Meridian, and that's kind of what we did. Drinking was a pastime. It was just one of the things we did. We rode around and got high and drank beer and did some pretty stupid things around there. I'm proud to say I was surprised to see David, just as surprised as he was to see me, because they drank and partied like I did from a very young age. First time I ever got drunk there was out at Jeff Woosley's parents' trailer, and got to drinking, you know, vodka, and I went completely nuts. The first time I ever got drunk, I blacked out on my feet, which was a reoccurring pattern with me. That's why I was so dangerous, and they would come tell me the next morning what I did, and I'd have no clue. But I went nuts out there. I had a spare tire out there and was throwing it at cars when they went by. trying to fight everybody, and they finally got Tommy Arthur. Said, you've got to try to knock him out. And I got one hell of a scar out here. He tried, he didn't. But I did calm down a little bit after getting the senior in. Got up the next morning, blood everywhere in the trailer, and, you know, did what we do. Lied to everybody, said we were wrestling, and we denied that there was any drinking going on, and I fell at the corner of the coffee table. And, you know, most people might have, having that experience the first time they drank, might have, there might have been some kind of red flag or caution that went up, but not for me. I mean, it was an exciting drinking to me back when we were young. I can remember going to the bar down in Waco for the first time. In science class, I don't know what most of y'all did in science and lab, but we doctored our driver's license, and we would get the tools in there and the microscopes, and we finally found the old typewriters in there that typed the numbers pretty close. And we'd get the tools in there that they'd cut the frogs open with, and we'd sit there and very strategically fix our IDs, and we were going to the bars in Waco. We'd relaminate them, and we were hitting the bars down there at 16. And I remember the first one went into down there, Continental Cowboy, and it's like a kid going to Disney World for me. I mean, it was the bright lights and the girls and the drinking. Scared to death, heart pounding. You get over in the corner and, you know, we'll go get the beer. You know, just sit over and shut up. But God, what a time that was. And graduated, went on down to Magic Music. I don't know if any of you remember Magic Music in Waco.
Yes.
But they had a underage side, non-drinking side, and a drinking side. And one of my goals in life, now they were kind of owned by our fake IDs. It was hard to get into Magic Music there for a little while. But there we would be dancing over there drinking our Cokes. And they had this wall that you could see through. It was glass. And you'd see everybody over there, you know, y'all can't drink. You know, you'd be over trying to have fun and dancing, drinking Cokes. And everybody else was over there on the drinking side. Well, my goal in life was to be able to get over there with them. And I finally got to. And boy, Rocky Raccoons, Caravan West down there, Meridian and Clifton and Valley Mills, we would take hostage. Caravan West, we would take hostage. And how we got back and forth from, you know, I can remember Dad waking me up one morning and asked me where my car was, and I said, I don't know. He said, what do you mean you don't know? And I don't know. And I mean, that's in high school. And I called Woosley, and he said, I was trying to, there was a crossover out there by 6, Highway 6, and the Target, where old Target used to be, you could cut across that ditch there and get up there. Well, I didn't make it. And Woosley and them come by, and I'm in the back seat of the car with the sleeping bag eating Cheetos. About 2 o'clock. He said, what are you doing? I said, I don't know. He said, you know, they bought me home. And I called him. I said, where's my car? He said, it's down there in the ditch. So we went down there to get it. And I kept the car for a long time. It was a City of Waco policeman wrote, you got what you deserved. It was in my windshield. Thank God I was gone when he came up. But that was high school. Had a great family, great home. Nothing that my parents did caused my alcoholism. I think I was born with the bad seed. The alcoholic seed, the seed of addiction, and man, did I water that baby for lots of years. Just craziness. We just did crazy stuff. And got out of high school, married right quick. I've got so many. I'm a good alcoholic. I've got so many ex-wives. We number them. And married number one. And, you know, it was just nuts. was down at College Station when she packed up and left, and my drinking and drugging got pretty bad. And I got thrown in jail while I was working down at Bryan College Station. One Super Bowl weekend, we got thrown in jail up there after the bars closed. I was with a couple of girls, and they weren't any of my numbered ex-wives. And they needed some beer after 2 o'clock, and we went out there by Highway 6 again, one of the convenience stores, and I ran in, got us a couple of cases of beer, and didn't pay, and just got in the car, and off we go. Well, they got their license plate number and came down to College Station. Anyway, they got a hold of them. They said, "We don't want y'all. We want the crazy guy that ran out of there with the beer." So they told them who I was and everything, and I'm down there at College Station. And my dad was county judge here at the time and at a conference in College Station. And I was going to meet him for supper. And the Bryan police come knocking on my apartment door. And Shirley had moved out, gone back to Waco. And they said, "We've got a warrant for your arrest out of Waco." I said, "Got to be some mistake." You know, and started telling them all this. "Well, my dad, this and that. He's down here." And so I conned them in to taking me by there to visit with him. I said, "There's got to be, you know, I don't remember doing that." And I could see the policeman and Dad kind of huddle up over there, and I could see Dad do like he always did, you know, cuss and shake his head and walk over. He said, "Did you run out of a convenience store up there with 2 cases of beer? Weren't you up there at Waco that weekend?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "Well, they're going to take you to jail if you don't go up there and get that straight." So he fixed it where I could take off work that Friday, and I got my paycheck and go up there and check myself into jail, pay my fine. It was a theft of more than $5, less than $200. Booked me into jail and everything, and made me sit there for a few hours. And I got out of jail and still had mistake because I still had money in my pocket. Went to check a couple of old haunts around there, Conley, and the last thing I remember was leaving the watering hole bar there at the Circle. And we were supposed to meet that night at the Texas Hall of Fame. And that was the last thing I remember is leaving the watering hole. And I woke up about 3 days later in the ICU there at Providence Hospital. I'd run under a semi-truck out there on 77. Should have killed me. I'm one of those, just like y'all, I shouldn't be here right now. Had a hell of a wreck out there. It punctured. I'm not going to show my scars because it's too cold. But I've got some holes. Yeah, he gets it. We'd have to cut the lights on and everything. But it crushed my hip and pelvis and punctured a lung. They had to take my spleen out. And it screwed the knee up and crushed my hip and pelvis. And I wake up about 3 days later in traction. Can't move. And I'm on the traction ward up there in Providence Hospital. And, you know, I'm not sure how I got there. And they started telling me. And I asked Dr. Etheridge down there. I said, how long am I going to be? And he said, 12, 14, or 16 weeks. And I threw the damnedest fit. Just started cussing and raising hell. And what did he bow up on me? He said, "Let me tell you something." He said, "You were the most, when they brought you in," he said, "first thing," he said, "with the laceration that you had over here on your left side," he said, "normally you bleed to death of a lacerated spleen in no more than 20 minutes. He said, "It took them 40 minutes to get you here." And he said, "The only way you made it, there was a Robinson City policeman that came out, wrapped his fist in gauze and stuck it. He applied pressure in that hole. And they loaded me up and he rode to the hospital with his fist stuck in my side." And he said, "Somehow that sealed that spleen off and stopped the bleeding, allowed you to at least get here to the hospital." But he said, "Worse than that," he said, "you shouldn't ever have made it here.
But he said, I don't know if I've ever seen a more vile, ugly, hateful. He said, you spit and fought and cussed everybody in this hospital as we tried to save their life. I don't remember that. So I kind of calmed down with that. And then started having a spiritual experience in the hospital. And it was obvious that God had saved my life for a reason. And I called in, Lord, I think Brother Creech came to see me, and two or three pastors, and I was in the Catholic hospital, and nuns were everywhere and praying. And I knew that God had saved my life and that I was going to go get out of that hospital, my walking miraculous self, and I was going to go save the world and tell them about Jesus, and I was going to go be a pastor. It was very clear what I was going to do with my life. And that lasted, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 weeks. I got to feeling better, and basically I got the tubes out in my lungs, and all the internal organs were healed. And I just had to lay there with this, my hip and pelvis was crushed so bad, I had to lay there with this leg pulled out of socket. They couldn't pin that hip and pelvis, so I had to lay there with this leg pulled out of socket until the hip and pelvis. And I got to feel, other than that, I was feeling pretty good, you know. And I popped off one time and I said, you know, if I could just have an old silver bullet, I believe I could, this deal could be tolerable. And one of the nurses laughed and said, you're in a Catholic hospital. We'll check with the doctor. There's nothing against you having a beer up here as long as you don't get drunk and fall out of bed and screw that hip up. And before I left that hospital again, I was drinking. I actually started drinking there in the hospital. And there's one of our old running buddies that even came in there with some lady friends late one Sunday afternoon. And I believe, if memory serves me correct, they kind of barricaded the door, and I think something about a joint was fired up in that hospital room. And because we thought at the time, what are they going to do? Phone you out of the hospital? They damn near did. I think y'all may have gotten asked to leave, and I nearly went with you. But my Lord, I was off and running again after that experience. 62 days in the hospital. I was in traction for 55 days. Had to learn how to walk again. I went back up to my mother and dad's, and the divorce had taken place during that time. And I hear lots of drunkologues about, you know, I did this and that. That the rest of the next 10 to 15 years is just a blur. You know, I went to Colorado, I went to Michigan, I went, no saying, everywhere I went, I finally showed up. And when that happened, it wasn't good. But I drank my way out of college and it was just a mess, and in and out of relationships. And the last, number two, was a disaster. I stayed married exactly a year. I've still got an amends to do there. If I doubt that I'll ever see her again, but I'm willing to. Number three, came back and lived in Valley Mills and got into AA there at the Triangle. Went to my first meeting back in 82 down with the hippies and the Bowden group in Austin. And it's kind of a neat group. They don't drink, but a few of them smoke a little marijuana and work the steps. Kind of a neat program. I wouldn't recommend it, but it works for some of them, I guess. Got a after another trip in jail and number three was a very, very professional, good person. She just happened to somehow let me in. But she tried her best to help me and get me back up on my feet when just about everybody else had given up on me. And, you know, it was one of those bad episodes where they
I always was a pretty good con artist, and for some reason I could talk them into, I talked to the police and to take them by the house that night to tell her that we were going to jail where she could come bail me out. Nice, affluent part of Waco. And at 2 o'clock in the morning, they go up to tell her that we're on the way to jail. And when I see her in that beautiful nightgown, I think, well, this is bullshit. They need to go and let me home. Let go home. We're here in the driveway. I'm right there. We're home. And they didn't see it that way. So I try to kick the windows out of the police car, and we end up in the front yard screaming and hollering, and they're working me over pretty good. And when I finally got out of that deal and got back home, I had some of my stuff packed up kind of out on the front porch, and we were ready to go get some help. And I went to the outpatient program there at DePaul. And, you know, that wasn't a bad deal. I learned a little. Stayed sober for 30 days and went my little 4 hours every night and got my DePaul chip. Start drinking again. And this time I was mixing it with prescription pills, and it'd get pretty ugly at the house. I'd wake up and it would either be passed out or OD'd, and you know, would tear the house up. And she had a couple of kids there, and it got bad. And I finally went to my first AA meeting there at the Triangle Group. And the Triangle Group was up there on 25th Street. Up on Franklin. Before they went down to 25th Street. Up there in a shopping center. And basically I was on foot. I would go there. I was working temporary. There was a guy named Ed Gully. We worked for Manpower, and he felt sorry for all the new drunks and get you neat little jobs and with moving companies. Didn't have a vehicle. And we'd go mow yards and work for moving companies and stuff. And I'd go to the old Serenity House at 10 o'clock. Then Triangle moved there 25th. Then I'd walk up to the old noon meeting there at Triangle. Then go back and hang out the old Serenity House there in Waco. And went to the Heart of Texas group over there at the church. Got a sponsor. Took a stab at the steps, kind of did them, didn't take the suggestions very well, kind of worked them my way. One, two, three, no problem. Four, ain't going to do. Well, I thought about some of that stuff. Fifth step, me, God, in the rearview mirror, riding around. I did the steps my way. And I stayed sober, I don't know if you'd call it, I didn't drink for 5 years. Was very active. I guess the meetings just kept me dry. I didn't drink because I lived in the meetings. Lived at the Triangle Group. Would go over there at the Central Group at night with Mickey and all them, Johnny G. I just lived in meetings. But I'd always hear, when they start talking about the fourth and fifth step, I always got very uncomfortable, and I'd have to get up and go in there at the coffee bar and hang out. Dodged those fourth and fifth step meetings because I knew I'd never do one. But I do remember hearing, if you don't do that fourth step and a fifth step, you're subject to drinking. And I'm here to tell you, for me, that came true. Kind of a wild story. I picked up my 5-year chip. Did pick it up. Actually, we had a birthday party with number 3 out at our home in Valley Mills. We moved out there. She was teaching school. And I was going, carrying what message I had down to the deer unit. Take meetings down there. Working with a heroin addict down there. And had my 5-year birthday at the house. Had a pretty good little get-together. And went pretty well. And another week or so later, my stepson and another kid there from Valley Mills ran home to get something, and there was a guy in our house. And he met them at the door with a shotgun. Hog tied those two boys up with some of my ties. And he told them, I'm a three-time loser and I'm not going back. And I kept that shotgun loaded, and he chambered a shell and got over them with that gun, they said. And hog tied, put them on the bedroom floor. And he stood there, they said, for a long time, and turned around and walked out the door. And I got in the car and drove off, and they saw the car. Anyway, it was a big deal, the police and everything. I had noticed right above where those boys laid, he had dumped all, I always kept my chips and cross and all. I'm a trinket junkie. I have all sorts of little crap that I keep. Well, he had dumped that on that bed. Right at some point in time after he tied those boys up, and it had my AA chips and cross in there. And I don't know if I like to think that that broke his train of thought that day. Something did, because it was a miracle he didn't shoot those boys. We were trying to, you know, they were doing the investigation and everything, and we were talking about it. And one of the boys was describing the car that left, and one of the guys told me, said, that car was at your AA birthday party. And I went, son of a gun. Knew who it was. It was the heroin. And we had to prosecute him. Hard deal. And everybody else went and got professional counseling and help. I was, at the time when all this went down, I had cut back on my meetings. I had divorced God. Wasn't working with a sponsor, and I'd done those steps my way. Started dabbling with the O'Doul's, drinking O'Doul's. For anybody that dabbles with O'Doul's, it's non-alcoholic beer for non-alcoholics. There's no way that it's danger. Do not do that. Then I started smoking a little pot again with the non-alcoholic beer. I had so much anger built up that I had no outlet for it, no healthy outlet. Like I said, everybody else went and got help over that deal. I didn't. I stewed. Quit going to meetings at all. Was good and pissed off at God. Was pissed at AA. Was not in a good place. One day I looked down, and there wasn't an O'Doul's. It was at the golf course again, and it was the full meal deal. And I had no resistance against that first drink, and I was off and running again. Just like I'd never quit. And sure enough, you know, I came home, the blackout, chased number three down the driveway. I don't know if I'd have killed her, if I'd have caught her. She thinks, kind of thinks I would have. Woke up the next morning, passed out, wake up, you know, that incomprehensible demoralization. Going through the house torn completely up. Looking, not knowing if there's going to be bodies in the next room or what. Nobody there. Get the call one more time from an attorney. Restraining order. Get your stuff. Get out. Like any good alcoholic, I took the Rottweiler, a few clothes and stereo, and I go to Lake Whitney. And hold up over there at King Creek. And it got bad for that next year and a half. And I drank at a place called the Season Ticket over at Bonanza. And I would get out over there very drunk. And the Lake Whitney group, which is, they say, it's the AA capital of the world, is right next to the bar where I was drinking. And I knew that that was an AA group. And I'd get out, and I can remember just standing there kind of swaying. And those, I could hear the music of that old Season Ticket. Front door was always open. And I could see lights on and that AA triangle, and I could hear the laughter in the sky. And I would sit there and stare, I don't know, a long time. Knew that I should be over there, and I'd turn and walk in to the bar. And I'd sit there and drink at that bar by myself and I'd spin a quarter, and I'd spin that quarter and stop it up on end. And I'd sit there.
Boy, it was fun.
And I would sit there and spin that quarter and stare in that mirror, and that's what I did, and I'd sit there and drink till they closed. And didn't have fun one night. The shotgun was around. Drank myself sober, crying. The big book talks about you come to a place where you don't want to live and you're too afraid to die. And I can tell you, for me, that's what hell was. And that's where I found myself one night about 2 o'clock in the morning. My old Rottweiler came over there and laid her head in my lap, put the shotgun down. I wasn't going to shoot myself, shit. I'm no good alcoholic, you know. I'm too big a chicken. But I crawled back into AA there at Laguna Park and met Frank and Bill Adair and Josh, Jerry Miller. Josh kind of latched on to me, and I never will forget. That was June the 27th, 94. I was completely whipped and knew it. And I came in with the attitude, whatever that man asked me to do, I did. And I normally bring it when I speak. Josh was a big drawer, and he was always drawing stuff. And he said, I normally don't do this right off the bat this early, but he said, I'm going to give you the secret to this deal. Because he said, it looks like you've had enough. And I can tell by the look in your eyes, you've had enough. And I believe when the pupil is ready, God puts the teacher in his life. That sponsee relationship was divinely set up. I have no doubt in my mind that God put that man in my life at the exact time. And he drew on a cross, and I still have it in my office today. And he drew a cross, and he did 5 boxes, and he put faith in the middle, put work, play, love, and AA. He said it all revolves around your faith, your relationship with God. He said the secret to life is balance. He said if you'll get up every day, take care of your relationship, surrender yourself to God, do that third step prayer, take care of your relationship with God. Everything else comes out of that. Go to work, learn how to be self-supporting through your own contributions. Go to work. Try to go find a job and be the best employee that you can be. Show love throughout the day. He said, treat people right. Open doors for the little old ladies. Put a smile on your face and pass love on. AA, read something out of the AA literature, approved literature, every day. Preferably the big book. Or talk with someone in Alcoholics Anonymous. Do something involved in the fellowship of AA every day. And then the last one was play. And he said, most alcoholics don't know how to play. He said, you need to go play. When you do all that, give yourself a reward.
What time is it, bud?
We doing all right?
Thanks,
oh, yeah. And he said, most alcoholics don't know how to play guilt-free. But he said, when you get all that done, go hit a golf ball or chuck a lure. Do whatever you enjoy doing, guilt-free. Playing is very important. But he said, if you'll do that every day and put some action in each of those 5 areas, you keep that cross balanced. He said, that's the secret. Balance is the secret of life. He said, you don't need to put too much into one area. It's the key is keeping that cross balance. I thought, how easy that is. So we started working the steps, and whatever he told me to do, I did. Did a lot of writing on the first step. I did my top 10. He told me to do it. My David Letterman top 10 screw-ups under the influence of drugs and alcohol. Could have done 100. You know, it was really hard to pick out your top 10. There was no doubt. And one thing Josh always taught me, the reason why it's so important to write it down is once you get it on paper, it can't run anywhere and you can't change it. You can't justify it with that magic magnifying mind like alcoholics always seem to be able to do.
you can't justify and rationalize your behavior. He had me write everything on paper. And we worked our way through those steps. The second step, God, I was very confused about God. And he said, if we're fixing to turn your will and your life over to the care of God, you need to have a good, clear understanding of who and what God is. He said, I want you to write a description of God that you came in here with. And if you could turn your will and your life over to the care of God, I want you to describe the kind of God that you could totally surrender to. So I had two pictures of God. This one that I came in by drinking God, it was a Gitche God. Very mean, was vindictive. If you screw up, he's going to nail you. There was no love in that God. This one that I described that I could, it was more of like a father. There was a lot of things in there about trust and love. And he crumpled this one up. He said, I don't think this is the one you want to go with. I'd saddle up this horse and ride if I were you. And as soon as I had, and that was very important for me, to get a clear concept of a God as I could understand, because the next thing we did was we held hands as two men and we got down on our knees and we said the third step prayer. And the third step prayer, to me, is one of the most powerful tools that there is in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I use that prayer every day. And, you know, God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do thy will. I love this line. Take away my difficulties. Ah, how many days in sobriety has that sentence resonated? God, take away my difficulties. The victory over them shall bear witness to those I might help of thy power and thy love and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. I love that. As Lorraine knows, we do that prayer for a Meridian Abstract, for our kids. We do that prayer every day. I love that prayer. And that's when the real power came into my life, slowly. The spiritual experience started. The fourth step, he was very, very, you know, my mind's racing and running about Mrs. Brown and all that stuff in the book. And he had just stopped and said, make a list. I want you to make a list. He piecemealed that fourth step out. Make a list of all people, places, and things that you've had a problem with. And I went back, and there were 48. There were 48. And I said, well, what about it? And he had just shut me down. Go make the list. And then after we had the list, he said, next column, what happened? What happened? And then I'd start saying, he said, no, just keep it there. And then we had he had me go to the dictionary and write definitions of some of the key words that we're going to use to describe how, in that third column, it affected me. Very important that you have a clear understanding of what those words and how it affected you and how it made you feel. Because a lot of times we come in with those drinking labels and it's not clear. And I had no idea that really what some of those words meant until I sat down with that Webster's Dictionary and had a clear-cut description of what those words were. And then I was able to say how it made me feel. And that was very big for me, the way we did that fourth step. And then the fourth column, my part in it. Chicken shit was a reoccurring word in that fourth column. I was a chicken shit. And I was a thief and I was a liar. Was a reoccurring theme in that. And the big book says, and I was guilty. We did set the ball rolling a lot of times. Fifth step I got with Josh, and I've gone through the sixth step several times. The sixth step, we got into the 12 and 12, and the seventh, more prayer.
the men's 8th and 9th step. Once again, out on my own, I would have probably gone and made some amends. The timing, we had to pray for the willingness to make those amends. I had to write a grave side, go to a grave and read a letter. Had to go to some of the ex-wives. They weren't very well received. but I had very clear-cut directions on how and when I was to make certain amends. And some of them I had to pray until the willingness came and the opportunity. He said a lot of times, if we push the envelope ourselves and we get selfish, wanting those promises and the after effect of that ninth step, if we push the envelope and get selfish on those, that's when the amends go, they don't always work out. But he said, if you'll wait for God and pray and do these through prayer, it's amazing how God will put those people into your life and set the circumstances, and you make those amends when he, in His time, under the directionship and the guidance of a sponsor. The 10th step, I'm like Frank, that's probably my favorite step. When we were wrong, it gives me the freedom to go out today and live. To stand on the firing line of life and to get out there amongst the world and make mistakes. I know today that some of the greatest things I've learned through this program comes through failure. And as long as I'm sober and get saddled up with God every day, I'm going to make mistakes. We're human. That's what humans do. But we have a way now. There's a freedom in that. We have a way now that when we're wrong and when we screw something up, we can go to that person and we can fix it. And there's a great freedom in that for me. Because then that gave me the willingness to try new things. The 11th and 12th step, it's amazing where God has taken us. Some of the things we're working on now in carrying the message, it's amazing what's taken place. In a short period of time, I never would have thought that I would have the job that I have today. And it's all because of the relationship and Alcoholics Anonymous. I've had two DWIs, and I've been in jail 6 different times, drunk in public and for. You know, I never was much of a fighter, but I was sure a mouther. And if you'd have told me today, Josh, and he instilled in me that through faith in God and the power of God and the steps and the fellowship with men and women, that we can do anything in this program that you set your mind out to do. I come from, I've had 4 different, my dad, his uncle, a great uncle, a great great uncle, were county judges here in this county. And I got to a point in recovery where we kind of went full circle. And I came to that point again where I had an inkling that I was either going to get into the ministry or I was going to run for public office. It was kind of following my heritage, my family's footsteps. And man, you're talking about being just scared completely to death with the ghosts that I have in my closet and my past in running for public office. And put my name on the deal and ran and was elected 6 years ago. And I'm not saying this to brag on anything that I did. And the only time I share this is when I speak. But through all that, I've served as a county judge now here in this county. That is an amazing miracle due to the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And a power. You know, the book says there is one who has all power. And that one is God. May you find Him now. And when you get connected to and through that power in this fellowship. There's nothing in this world, there's nothing that we can't do. There's nothing that's too big for this fellowship and this program and these steps in God. So wherever you are in your walk in life, no matter what you've done, if you hear nothing else than that, I hope from that you receive hope. Because I'm telling you, from a screwed up, as most screwed up, and as that doctor said, as vile and as nasty and as dirty and as ugly as a drunk that there ever was, if God can do that, if you keep doing, as Sonia says, the next right thing in this fellowship, great things can happen. We have a home. I was telling some of you, got here a little late. Home. Sonia and I met in the fellowship of AA. Josh was my best man in our wedding. He's dead now and gone. But there's so many things that he gave me that I remember and that we use on a daily basis. Sonia and I, with my sobriety date is June the 27th, 94. And on June the 28th, 96, we had a son together in sobriety. Neither one of her boys, our son and stepson, they've never seen us drink. And it's a family of recovery. My wife is a beautiful human being. She's tough as nails. She will bite. But she is a great lady and a great member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And our home is a place of recovery. Got so many couples and people, Gary and Lorraine, some of the couples over in the Whitney group, the Harrises, Jerry Jones and Billy, Bobby. Those couples, they worked with us and molded us and walked us through the fire in this fellowship. Our marriage today is a good marriage, and it's strong. And it's because of the principles that we've applied and the traditions. We've worked together in couples meetings, and they are a bitch. The couples meetings are great. It's the meetings after those meetings in the car that sometimes get a little intense. But we've worked hard in this fellowship. We've got a great marriage today. I love my wife. I love my family. And everything that I have today and everything that I am, I owe to Alcoholics Anonymous. So that's about all I've got to say tonight. I'm very thankful and grateful to be here. This is a great idea. And for Gary and Lorraine, and I know David, and for the folks that helped put this together and have faithfully been here. I'm sorry that I have missed out. But I'm glad to be here tonight and to be a part of this fellowship and this group. God bless you. I love you. And just stay around AA because it works. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Joel.
I'll give you a little bit.
Oh, he's turning the light on. He's turning the light on.
Oh, here we go. Sorry about that. Old habits.
Well, once again, I want to thank Cole for being here. It's always an inspiration to hear you talk.
Thank God. One of the things I love about speakers like Cole, there's a lot of circuit speakers out there, and you can hear them a dozen times, and you'll hear the same talk every time. And every time I hear you tell your story, it's different. It's the same story, it's just totally different. Just an awesome day. Just awesome. I appreciate everybody that's been here tonight. This is an anonymous program. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our principles.
Please respect this and treat in confidence who you see and what you do. Our anonymity is very important to the success of this meeting. Nobody has anything else? We're in the closing.
No.
Somebody's got to ask it.
Oh, I already did it.
Bring your kids home.
All right.
June City Park, 2 p.m. next Saturday.
I've got one that lady rather to submit an application for membership.
Good.
Who's our instant constant abundant source?
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation,